Now I get, oh, yeah, cool, you play hockey? I'm like, no, it's baseball. God damn it, it's baseball.
We're going to need a big show. We're going to need a
bigger, 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 bigger.
We're going to need a big show. We're going to need a bigger show with Mike, Kevin, guests.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of We're Going to Need a Bigger Show. Ashley Gaskin joining me today, our producer. Say hi.
Hi.
Hello. Cameron can't be with us, but we are still at the Chattanooga Film Festival, and we are very excited. We have, please introduce yourself, sir.
I am Jeremy Gardner.
The director of The Battery and Tex Montana Will Survive.
Co-director of Tex Montana Will Survive.
And I'm Christian Stella, the other co-director, and I guess cinematographer of The Battery.
Awesome. Well, guys, thanks so much for sitting down with me today. I appreciate it.
No, thanks for having us.
I was, first and foremost, a huge fan of The Battery. I really had no idea what I was going to get into. You know, I had seen a trailer, and then I was like, well, you know, zombies. I mean, it's, you know, it's a big thing right now. So, but I love independent stuff. So I was like, okay, let's give it a shot. And man, I was just blown away. I mean,
thanks.
So before we get into that though, I mean, what was your, early life like with film? I mean, has film always been kind of a big part of your life, or, I mean, did that come later on?
I mean, well, I always loved film, obviously. I was just, you know, I devoured whatever I could find when I was a kid, but I started making, we started making little short films with, Christian Stella over here, yeah, when I met them in high school. And okay, we just made little short films about like killer Beanie Babies, and then and then the next Christmas, when Furbies were all the rage, we made a movie about killer Furbies, which was a spoof of Psycho. And then the year after that, we did a Pikachu, which was Jaws and Jurassic Park, kind of a spoof. So we started doing that, and then we decided to make like a feature. You know, we were 18 years old. We shot for like 4 months over the summer about evil killer plastic bags. Are you catching the through line here? Everything is evil and killer.
Mundane evil killer.
Yes, like that's all you do. Just pick a thing and then make it evil and killer, and then you have a movie. That's how you should. Everyone should start, I think.
Yeah, except that we made that like killer plastic bags into a 90-minute drama,
full on, like super earnest, like From Dusk Till Dawn esque drama.
So even then, I mean, was it just recruiting friends, you know, getting help wherever? I mean,
yeah, that's what I mean. We had no film school to speak of. We all dropped out of school because we were in Florida, which it doesn't matter down there. You can
no, it's when you drop out of school, you get a higher education in Florida.
It really is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Seems to be that way here too. I mean, I did the same thing. I was like, I'm not learning anything for film or anything like that. You know, I need to just do my own thing.
I wasn't learning anything for anything.
Right.
It's like, my history teacher is really only teaching history because you have to teach a class if you want to be a coach. So he was the basketball coach, and then he would just be like, "Yo, read chapter 5 and answer the questions." And I was like, "Okay, this guy's really, really, really sparking my curiosity in my brain." It just wasn't doing it for us. So we started making movies and just kind of putting ourselves through the paces and figuring it out. Then we made another movie feature for like $2,000 called The Robert Cake, about a guy who bakes his dead friend's ashes into a cake and then eats the cake and then becomes possessed by him, which Christian wrote when he was like 15.
Yeah, I wrote it when I was 15. And then we made that like a month or something, like really quickly.
For like $2,000. And then we got into like the Sarasota Film Festival with like Sean Penn was there with like The Pledge and Richard Dreyfuss and William H. Macy. We're like, what the hell are we doing here?
We were the first movie ever there shot on like video.
Yeah, yeah. The festival.
It was that long ago,
sure,
too.
Yeah, the fest director like pulled us aside and he was like, I don't know what to do with you guys because clearly this is a movie,
right,
but clearly you have no resources whatsoever. But he put it into his credit. He put it in. So that was, wow, that was it. And then everybody kind of moved away and grew up. And
what was the reception like for that? I mean,
we had walkouts, which was great.
Oh, we had we were playing. It was Sarasota is almost a retirement community.
Sure.
And that movie was just, I mean, are we allowed to curse on the podcast?
Oh, yeah.
That movie was just like, fuck this, fuck that, and whatever. But
sure,
then the second there was blood, there were walkouts. And I was like, yes.
But that's so surprising to me. Everybody's sensibilities, it's like, you know, you can, language is never an issue. But as soon as nudity or blood, it's people lose their minds.
Oh, yeah. And what's fascinating too about us playing there is I think with the Sarasota Film Festival has like an edge of prestige about it,
right?
And it is in like a retirement community, so I think everybody there was just like, well, whatever's playing, we'll see, because was selected by the Sarasota that. And it was just like a bunch of kids like talking about baking a guy into a cake, and then it's like, you know, he cuts his own stomach open and like is births his friend in like a ball of goo. And yeah, they were like, this is not this is not high quality cinema.
So you said you shot that for $2,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did you guys finance it?
No, I don't know.
Probably my father won it on a slot machine or something. Right. Okay. And just gave it to us.
You were like, did you just come, oh, we need $2,000. Like,
well, it wasn't even like, at that point we're making features like in our house and in places we know. So it wasn't even like, well, we have $2,000 and now we will budget it out accordingly. It was just more like, oh shit, we need a knife or something today. We got to go buy a knife or go buy this. It wasn't like, I'm just saying we basically spent about $2,000.
Yeah, and then we completely changed. We don't work like that at all.
Oh, no, we don't. No, we spent 10 long years figuring out how to do it exactly the same way.
Yeah, we took a 10-year hiatus and came back, and we came back so much different.
Yeah, well, we came back $6,000 and no planning as well.
Yeah, so what, I mean, while you moved away, I mean, were either of you working, like, doing film stuff in the interim? I mean...
No.
Nothing. No, I moved, so they moved to the Northeast, their family moved to Connecticut.
Oh, that's where I'm from originally.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. Is that why you ended up shooting shooting Battery there?
Yeah. He lives in Connecticut now.
Oh. I followed them up.
What part do you live in?
I live in Norwalk.
Okay. I lived in Meriden, Connecticut.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, well, it was weird.
Yeah.
It's a weird place.
It really is.
It's that thing between Massachusetts and New York. Yeah, but they moved up, and then they were like, you know, his family was like, we know you want to be an actor. We live, you know, 45 minutes from New York City. You should come up and stay with us, and you could be close. And I went up and, like, did some plays, and I kind of pounded the pavement for a little bit, like, looking for auditions. And then ultimately, their whole family moved back to Florida, and I just stayed. And then at some point, I got tired of the process of pounding the pavement and going to auditions. You know, you go to an audition and you sit in a room with like 20 other guys and you go in for a minute and a half and then you leave and you never get a call. And the demoralizing thing about acting and auditioning is you could be great. You just might be like too tall for the actress they've already cast, right, or, you know, slightly different look, but you don't know that. You don't know. You just know that they didn't call.
Sure. Pat talked a little bit about that yesterday. We sat down with Pat Healy and, you know, I mean, that's got to be a disheartening experience. I mean, you're kind of putting yourself out there. I mean, is that why, you know, you just kind of said, all right, enough is enough?
Well, that's what, I mean, that's what it was. I mean, I had the confidence in my abilities and I had the confidence in our abilities to make a movie. And I truly believed that if we thought about it carefully, we could construct an engaging story around our resources and make something, especially with the way the technology was catching up, we can make something that people would that could play on a level with like real movies. Absolutely. And so I just decided I'm just going to write myself a role, make a movie, get it out in the world, and then maybe I can get work from people seeing the work I made for myself.
Sure.
Rather than just blindly going to auditions and stuff. And so far it's worked. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I've been in like three movies and keep meeting amazing filmmakers. And so I just got offered a role outside, actually.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Living the dream now. Mm-hmm. So talking about The Battery, I mean, you know, you said that you wrote it and, you know, that you wrote yourself a part. I mean, what was the pre-production like? I mean, how do you decide, okay, this is it? What do we do now?
It was 2 years of Jeremy saying, hey, let's film this movie, and me saying no.
Yeah, he really...
Why were you against it?
Well, I'd never shot our old movies.
Okay.
I just wrote one of them.
Sure.
And helped and did, like, you know, PA type stuff.
Right.
So I became a food photographer over the years. And I was like, suddenly, I kept upgrading my camera as I got more and more food photography jobs. And then... I had a pretty good career going in food photography, and I was like, let me get this camera that can also shoot a movie, because Jeremy keeps saying he wants to shoot this zombie movie.
What was the camera?
The 5D Mark II.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was like, I'll get the camera, but my career is going pretty damn good right now, and I don't want to waste all my time making Jeremy's movie that I know is just going to play in one film festival and no one's ever going to see it again, because that's basically what happened to our old movies.
Sure.
So, you know, there was a lot of like...
He had no faith in
so
me.
So what was the tipping point for you to be like, okay...
Well, yeah.
He took the money from a bunch of people, and I was like, oh man, he took the money, now we're going to make it.
Yeah, once I actually asked people for $6,000, and then...
So what was that like? I mean, the financing, you know, is...
I mean, it basically got to the point where, I'm terrible with pre-production, because there's just, especially considering, there's so much shit to do, and I'm a writer, and I'm an actor, and I had a pretty good, you know, grasp on, you know, framing shots and what I wanted the movie to look like, but as far as locking down locations and props... and extras and making sure those extras had all that stuff was just insurmountable, it seemed to me. So I put out an ad on Craigslist for like a local producer, and then from talking to him, we eventually found the locations, which were really, really pretty, and that kind of set the ball rolling. And at some point, I hear this a lot, but at some point you have to stop saying I'm going to make a movie, and you say, I'm making a movie on August. I just set an arbitrary date. August 1st, we're shooting this movie. Sure. And then when I asked for the money, I had been talking to people I work with at the restaurant that I still work at, because filmmaking doesn't pay you anything.
No, it doesn't. No.
But I was talking to buddies and bartenders and stuff. I said, hey, if I ever asked you for $600 for a percentage stake in this movie, would you give it to me? And they'd be like, yeah, yeah. And then when like 10 of them all said yes, I was like, okay, on Monday, guys, I'm coming, bring your checkbooks, because I'm literally asking. And then they all brought the $600, and then Christian was like, fuck, I have to make this now.
Well, I'm like, Jeremy's not going to be able to make it with someone else if it's just $6,000.
No.
Sure. So from there, I mean... You cast your other lead, Adam. I mean, what was that process like?
That process was me basically hemming and hawing and not being able to find a co-lead for the movie. Right. And Christian, like, booking his plane ticket up here, then going, wait, you still don't have a Mickey, do you? And I was like, no, it's fine. I got one.
He never had anything.
I had nothing.
There was not a single zombie cast when I got there.
None.
Except for my wife, who played the booby zombie in the movie that gets the car. And that even that was in the air. It was like, well, if we can't get such and such, she's willing to do it.
No.
Yeah, no, no.
But Adam was after like me realizing that Christian was not going to come up if I didn't have another actor, which makes sense, because you can't make that movie without the second guy, right? It's basically a two-hander.
Sure.
And then one of my buddies who gave me some of the money, who I work with, said, you know what? I forgot to tell you, I have this friend named Adam. He used to be a baseball player, and then he blew out his arm, and he became an actor. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how did you not, like, you know I'm scrambling, and you've got a guy who not only is an actor, but he used to play baseball, so he can, like, at least realistically play catch on screen. Yeah, maybe you should set up a meeting, ass. And then I did, actually. The first meeting with Adam was like, I was like, bring your glove. And we just, like, played catch and talked about the script, and I was like, okay. You're in. I don't have any other options. No. He was great. It was great. And then he ended up becoming a producer, and then just spiraled out. You know.
Like, really? Yeah. Okay. So I mean, what was the shooting like? I mean, it had to be pretty tight, and it just looking at the movie, I haven't had a chance to see the behind the scenes documentary yet.
Oh yeah, that's why we're saying all the shit that's in that documentary.
Yeah, I'm dying.
Play that and push record and record the audio from the documentary, because that's like what you're getting.
That's like our second movie. I mean,
right.
It's 90 minutes long.
Yeah, that was what's so impressive about it to me. I was like, wow, I need to get my hands on this thing. But no, I don't have to. No, that's not true. But so, I mean, just looking at the movie, it looks really hectic and stressful. And I mean, knowing that, you know, it was on such a small budget, I mean, what were some of the challenges you faced while you were shooting?
Well, we shot the whole movie in one day. So the challenges are, you know, it was all challenges.
Everything goes wrong at all times. You know, it's like you get to a location, you only have the location for 3 hours, and there's a lawnmower, or the lawn crew shows up at the same time. We closed down a road. We had a whole road closed down for us.
Right.
We get there, and we needed this road because it was the only dirt road in town. We get there, they're paving that dirt road.
There's a steamroller just paving the road on that particular day.
It's like, oh, no, what are they? They were able to close it down for us because it was already closed for paving.
Oh, no.
And then, of course, we could maybe turn this way and shoot on that road, but you've got the boop, boop, boop steamroller just rolling down. We would literally do a take as it was like coming towards us, and then it would pass. But and then Adam had to go like ask the steamroller driver to like, can you go pave that way for just a minute, like, and let us finish this? Yeah. Which
and
we also cut that scene out.
No, that scene is now 3 seconds.
In the opening credits. But you know, there were, you know, we got the car and we get the car up to set the actual station wagon, and we start shooting the day one at the hotel where Christian's talking about the lawn crew, and then there's a giant hornet nest in the door panel on the inside of the car. That suddenly, we drove it 300 miles, and then suddenly the hornets are like, hey, wait, where are, this isn't where we went to sleep. And it came out like with a vengeance, just hornets flying out of the car. So we're like swinging bats and spraying stuff and trying to get the hornet, because he's like, yeah, I'll die.
I'm Macaulay Culkin and my girl. I'll explode. My face will explode.
And of course, you can't shoot at a hotel that's in the middle of nowhere, because sure, hotels are on roads. That's how people find hotels. So of course, there's just traffic going on behind us, and that was day one. And it just got worse.
Filming an apocalyptic movie is really hard, even in the middle of the woods.
Sure.
For some reason, there was always a lawnmower going.
Always.
And we're like, where are we? We're in the middle of nowhere. Somebody is mowing the woods. And, there's planes, and it's hold for plane.
You know what's funny is we first of all, you think, oh, it'll be easy to shoot a movie with two guys in the woods. And then you realize we can't show any lights. You can't, because
there's no electricity.
No electricity. And then you can't have a plane fly overhead or hear a car. And we were just like, it became a nightmare. And then we just went back and shot Tex Montana in the same city, another movie about a guy who's supposed to be completely in the woods and alone. And it was just like, I mean, every single cut in every single outtake of Tex is just fucking trucks. Trucks. What is it? Truck o'clock? It was always truck o'clock. There's always people. And we're literally talking about like a town in the middle of nowhere, northwest Connecticut.
Sure.
Yeah, I think in Tex Montana it says 1,000. He's supposed to be in a preserve that's 1,000 square miles of nothing.
Wow!
And it's like, so then we trucks, plane.
Unbelievable. Well, to talk about the battery just a little bit more, one of the most impressive things is the soundtrack. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Thank you.
It works on every level within the film. When did it kind of become apparent? Oh, I can use, you know, insert our soundtrack through headphones and you know, make it kind of an incidental thing like that.
Yeah, I'm going to go on record and say I was against that, and I was wrong.
I was
really wrong. I was like, I don't think there should be music in this movie.
Oh, wow.
I was like, that's so not post-apocalyptic. I was like, these guys should be alone, and you're going to be hearing another person's voice in the songs. And I was like, that's suddenly, it's not like... so lonely anymore.
Sure.
You have other
sense.
Voices.
I mean, that does, you know.
But I was really
wrong. You were
wrong,
yeah.
I was really wrong.
Yeah, well, no, that was in the script. That motif was in the script. And
okay.
Mickey hides in his headphones, and we knew we were going to be able, I knew from the start we were going to be able to inject songs in there that way, which I think is fun, because needle drops, I like needle drops. I like songs that play in movies. I mean, maybe it's a little manipulative, but fuck, Scorsese does it. Who cares? It's like, it's cool.
Yeah.
But to be able to actually use, an on-screen motif to actually find a way to, you know, naturally put that song into the movie,
sure,
was a great workaround. We found the bands randomly. A band I loved saw something we put on Twitter, Rock Plaza Central, and then he's like, hey, cool, you guys gonna use our music? And then he allowed us to use our music, and then suddenly he's recording a cover for us, and then suddenly I'm like, one of my heroes is like my friend, and I'm like, what's going on? This is amazing. And then he put us in contact with some other bands who were wonderful, and Christian knew some bands from Florida. I mean, we probably spent like $1,000 total on like every song in that movie.
And the songs that we actually spent money on, it was just for like legal reasons.
Clearance.
Like
the cover.
Like, no, well, the cover is
the cover was the public domain.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But it's yeah, no, it'd be just like, oh man, yeah, you can use our song, and then be like, oh, I totally forgot that.
Yeah, like he lives in Canada, but he has like he has a small like you know U.S. label that had it, so we had to go through them. But they like gave us the two songs for like $250 a piece, like worldwide rights, and, you know. So it was great. Yeah,
that's incredible.
It was awesome.
Yeah, and I mean the moment with Anthem, I mean that is just that's become like my anthem. Like anytime like I get down on myself, I'm like, nope, this fucking song.
Just put it on and dance it out, dance it away, buddy.
I love it.
No, I love it too, man. I'm so I could never have imagined that we would. Would have gotten those guys to sign on.
Yeah, and we really had to too, because we didn't film an alternate version of the scene. Yeah,
in the script says he puts on headphones, pushes play, and dances to Anthem for the Already Defeated, and then it's just like they can take our, but it's like in there.
And yeah, and I was like, well, we're gonna film an alternate take where you're just not lip syncing, you're just dancing,
sure.
So that we could put any song in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we were like, man, we're really tired, and it's dark, and we were afraid to walk through the woods.
But we were in the middle of the woods in the middle of the night, and we were like, we should probably just back it up and go.
Sure.
So then we had to pretend we had filmed an alternate scene in case that they were like, oh well, you've now shot it with the guy singing it. Well, right. It's going to cost a little more now because they knew we were stuck with it.
That's such a scary move.
It
to
was,
make like that.
But they didn't. It never came up. And actually, what was great was, you know, we get notes back from Chris Eaton, the singer and the lead singer of Rock Plaza, and he was like, you need to turn Jeremy's vocals up, let him sing. And I was like, great, that was awesome.
That's so cool. So I mean, you guys wrap on that. I mean, what was your plan for after it was done? I mean, what was the, you know, how do you roll it out? I mean, was it festivals, was it trying to secure distribution, or?
Yeah, it was festivals first. I mean, that was the goal. And we got it into world premiere at Telluride Horror. Wow. And the festival director sent us just this lovely letter saying, you know, I had already like wrapped up all the slots for the festival, I was done, you know, but I doing my due diligence, I saw your screener in the mail, so I popped it on. And he goes, and suddenly like 45 minutes into it, my wife's iPhone is like down, which she never puts her phone down, and like we just really loved it. And so they played it, and then
We had like a dry spell though. I mean,
oh, a huge after from Telluride Horror
from like 10 festivals in a row.
Really?
Oh yeah, and that, and then we ended up signing our digital rights away because we were like, well, that was it, that was our festival run.
Right.
And then randomly got an email from Imagine Film Fest in Amsterdam, a big, wonderful, beautiful festival, and they were like, hey, we'd love to play it. And then from that, you know, because there's like a genre film festival like
union
like a network, right. And so once Amsterdam played it, then suddenly like Dead by Dawn Scotland was like, hey, we want to play it too, and then suddenly it just started cropping up in a lot of festivals,
and we kept winning.
Yeah,
as well.
So we go to like we go to Amsterdam, and like their audience award is like, it's been won by like Donnie Darko and From Dusk Till Dawn and
Silence
The Raid,
the
Silence of the Lambs. It goes back like 25 years, and then, you know, we like and you can see every day on the website the audience votes, like, you know, the percentage going up and down. With the fact that we won that was totally absurd. What was like the main thing?
I mean, we beat like the new Evil Dead.
Oh yeah,
I mean, like full studio movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then little movies, which I mean, like I could say, but they're like our friends, you know.
Yeah,
like,
with Jugface, fuck Chad Kinkle.
I think
Resolution, fuck those guys too.
Yeah,
Justin,
like, they're
and Aaron.
Our friends, but right. You know, those were the ones.
No, yeah, I remember the last night we were there, because Christian didn't get to make it to Amsterdam, but me and Adam were there. And the last time we were there, there was the premiere of like Wong Kar Wai's new movie, like the Grand. No, who did the Grandmaster? Was it Wong Kar Wai?
I don't know.
I'm just gonna say Wong Kar Wai.
Yeah.
And somebody it was this big premiere. They were like, well, you guys are in the lead, but we got to let the gigantic Wong Kar-wai epic movie play first. And they were just like sitting out there, like just crushing beers, waiting 2 hours for this Wong Kar-wai movie to get over to tabulate the votes. And then they were like, yeah, you got it. You won.
Holy
you beat
shit.
Him. I was like, that's amazing.
So was that how you met, you know, these guys that you're friends with? I mean, is that how you met Benson and Moorhead?
Yep, we met them there just briefly.
Did you really?
They didn't hate them. I was just like, these guys are fucking full of themselves. Look at them. They're like, they've got so much like bravado, and like, they're just like.
Had you seen the movie yet, though? Had you seen
We literally flew in to Amsterdam that day, went to the hotel, came to the festival and Resolution was playing, and I was like, Adam, we have to go see this. Those guys are going to be here. Sat down and I fell asleep in 5 minutes. And I woke, I was so tired. I woke up and I was like, oh my God, Adam, tell me what happened in that movie so I could pretend I saw it. But then we ended up like just meeting them briefly, and then they left. But then we found out that they were going to be at a festival in Brazil a couple months later that we were going to, and we ended up spending a week down there and had just a blast. I mean, they're wonderful, really whip smart, intelligent guys. But you know,
me being on the outside, I didn't go to either. I didn't go to either Imagine or Brazil. And so, but from when he's at Imagine, he's like, "Yeah, these guys are really full of themselves." Blah blah blah. And then in Brazil, he's like, "These guys are sweethearts. You gotta watch Resolution."
Yeah. And then we went, and then Christian was like, oh shit, they're having a lot of fun in Europe winning awards. So he flew to Scotland.
I flew to Scotland so that I could sit next to Chad Crawford Kinkle, who I'm now like best friends with.
Yeah, he's amazing.
As we won the audience award, like Jeremy got me right in the seat next to Chad, and I was just like, oh, because I was like, yeah, he should have won. You know, his movie shot on an Alexa, and it's beautiful.
Is that Jug Face?
No, yeah. Jug Face. Well, that's the thing, too, about festivals, which is, you know, I don't think it's a that big of a surprise that was the Battery better than Wong Kar-wai's movie? Fuck no. It was that we were there for 6 days. We made ourselves available to everybody. We were always talking to the people, having beers with the audience and the crowd afterwards. That's how you win an audience award. You win the audience over.
Jeremy makes himself,
you know, big
available.
Q&As and dancing, sure. You know, I'm doing the dance on the stage and things like that. It's not really quality. It's more about showmanship. Sure. At that point, I don't for a second think that The Battery was better than 90% of the movies that played at Imagine, but it's just it's an audience award for a reason.
Sure.
The audience liked it and liked us, and that's, you know, that's the one thing I've always said I like about Kevin Smith, is that you love him or hate him, he's out there. He puts himself out there and it makes himself available to his fans in a way that's, you kind of have to hustle at this point. Sure. You really have to. I mean, if we go from making a zombie movie to making like a little movie about it, like a comedy about a guy in the woods, we got to somehow hope that the people who liked The Battery also liked us and are willing to go to this place now.
Well, that's a big leap too. I mean, if you watch, just for anybody who wouldn't be familiar with you, if they were to watch the trailer for The Battery and then the teasers that are available for Tex Montana, I mean, the tone is just night and day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what was the thinking there? I mean, what made you want to switch gears and do comedy?
You know what we didn't do in the Q&A? Do you want to tell the story of how, like, the how this movie came to be?
I would love
that. How it really came to be?
Well, it sounds like you know it. So.
That we were watching Benson and Moorhead's VHS segment.
Bone Storm, yeah.
And an early cut, they were asking for any advice, but our opinion on it.
Sure.
And Jeremy goes, "What if VHS came to us and asked us to do a segment like that?" He goes, "You know, we're playing on the same festivals. They could come to us and ask us to do a segment." And I said, "I will never shoot a found footage movie in a million years."
So I made him shoot a found footage movie. And but I had that idea for a while.
An hour later, he had convinced me. Like, to shoot Tex Montana. But he apparently had the idea in his head. But I'm saying that was the first time you told me the idea, and it was like within an hour.
Well, no, but it wasn't the first time I told you, because the first time I told you, my original idea. Yeah, you didn't give a shit.
Because it was found footage.
Because my original conceit was, why don't we do a Survivor like television type show where the guy gets out there and he's fucking like hunted by a creature, and we make this monster movie of one guy out in the woods shooting a show, and Christian goes, fuck that. And then after seeing Bone Storm, something clicked and I went, oh my God, it's a comedy. It has to be a ridiculous Anchorman type Eastbound and Down guy in the, instead of it trying to make a serious horror movie with under those strictures, we just got to make it a total like absurd comedy.
We couldn't think of a creature. We were like Willow Creek came out,
and then it also becomes it's easier to bend the rules of a guy who's making a show and is a complete idiot and narcissist keeping filming than if a guy's getting attacked by a monster. You know, at some point he's going to just stop filming. And that's the one of the things we always don't like about found footage is if you're going to make a found footage movie, you have to know immediately that on some level people are going to go, why is the camera running? Why is the camera there? Who's holding the camera here? That doesn't make sense. And so we were trying to build the conceit of a found footage movie around why it would exist.
That's
in the
how
he, first
that's
place.
How he convinced me to film found footage movies. Sure. Like, well, it's a guy filming a television show, so it has a reason to exist. Like, it's not just a kid's holding a camera just for the sake of holding a camera. And also, it's a guy filming a television show, so it's allowed to look good.
Yeah, it can look prettier. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be home video, shaky home video. It could be a guy with a tripod, you know, and that was the idea. There's a guy with a lavalier mic, lapel mic on at all times, a wireless mic, because he's filming a show.
Anyway, we also found a way around the whole thing that bugs some people about found footage, which is who would assemble this footage into a narrative of people getting murdered or whatever it is. And it was just like, well, he, you know, is constantly addressing his editor on screen. Sure. And you eventually come to find out that his editor is releasing this because it's a fuck you to him. Like, he's an asshole to her. So now you have a reason for a guy who thinks of himself so seriously and thinks of himself so highly to have all of this like negative footage out there of him because it's like a fuck you to the boss, basically. Sure. So all of those reasons are why we train. But we also did it because we were trying to hustle and get money to make a bigger horror movie, and it's too slow. So we were like, let's just go back out in the woods and make a movie together.
So can I ask what the budget was on Tex Montana?
Yeah, it was $1,500.
Oh shit!
Yeah, we went down instead of up. We went from 6,000 on the battery, and we were just like, you know what? Let's go out. Let's each put $500 in, and let's own this thing outright ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was Jeremy, myself, and Adam Mickey from the battery.
Sure.
We all just put in $500 of our own money, so that we're the only owners, unlike the battery, where we have like a ton of our
friends. The battery has like 12 investors. So, you know.
So, but like with that, I mean, why was I guess, I mean, it's in vogue to crowdfund. I mean, was that ever an option? I mean, was it?
I'm not a fan of Kickstarter for film funding. Like the thing that I don't like about it is the way the festival world works. Uh-huh. You finish the movie, and then you'd have to premiere the movie and take it on a festival tour, but you couldn't give it to your backers because then it would be pirated. And if it was pirated, you'll get kicked out of film festivals.
Sure.
Because we've had that happen.
Well, it's also about like, it's about taking money from people and then them not seeing the product for 2 years or 3 years, you know, at that point.
Yeah, because I would say they deserve to see it before film festival season if they paid for it. But at the same time, a film festival won't even play it if we've released it in some way beforehand.
But
it's a catch 22.
We ran into that. We did a feature, and I mean, we crowdfunded a big chunk of it, and we can't give it to anybody. You know,
we're
on this. I feel guilty about it.
Yeah,
well, that's
absolutely.
But bringing up crowdfunding, we have considered the concept of crowdfunding a release because at that point, the second we hit the goal that we're looking for, everyone has the movie instantly. It's not like give us money and then you'll get a movie eventually in some year. It's give us money and the second you get it, if we hit that goal, you will have it that night.
But we're talking about the second we hit that goal, we release the film Creative Commons to the world for all time.
Sure.
And that's what I think crowdfunding should be used for.
Yeah, and we could put up all the footage and people can make their own cuts, you know. Then there's 7 hours of jokes that it's only 82 minutes long, so it would be fascinating to see what people would do with that kind of footage. I mean, not to say that we're going to go that route, but just to have a movie that costs so little money, we now don't have to go the traditional route, wait for years, collect slowly little dribs and drabs of money after we've given away all these other things to, you know, all the people you end up having to give that shit away to. We can just say, boom, here it is, and now it's yours, it's out in the world, enjoy it, now we have a little bit of money ourselves, now we can go make another one.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do that with the money, you know.
Yeah, we would make another movie with the money that we would make by selling this movie off to the world.
And just keep siphoning it
back. So, rather than sell them the next movie and make them wait, we'll sell them this movie and let them own it.
Sure.
And by them own it, I mean the internet own it forever.
So how do you, I mean, because one of the things as filmmakers, it's this thing we kind of talked about a little while ago, that this thing of, we did this movie and, you know, you're on the movie train and then you got to go back to your day job. Mm-hmm. That sucks. And there's not a whole lot of, the film is not supporting you, you know?
Right.
So how do you, you're talking about, you know, this digital platform, which is incredible, but does it make, you know, can you quit your day job from that? You know, like, does that come into the equation for you at all?
I mean, yeah, I hit the deep, deep, dark shallows of sadness all the time. Sure. When I think that, you know, am I going to be able to find a way to make this work, you know, as my job? And what's crazy is you're really talking about, well, what do I make right now? And I live off of maybe 50 grand in a good year. So if I can't find a way to make 50 grand making movies, that's just sad.
Sure.
I mean, that's just sad. Now, I think that there is a, I believe, especially the way that we're talking about, like, so we, I have a script right now that's out there, and it's good, you know, it's $250,000 budget.
Right.
And for some reason, we've gone in 5 years. We've gone from people asking for $1 million for movies like this to people asking for $250,000 for movies like this, and then still being put through the ringer for 8 months over casting and story decisions. You're like, you're giving me $250,000. I'm going to give you a cinema ready movie back. Like, you know, like, yeah, I'm
they
not
want it to look like a, you know, a $4 million movie.
Sure.
You know. Yeah,
and they want, you know, the kid from Twilight in it, and they want, you know, this and that, and you're like, no, why am I making these concessions for such a small amount of money? I'd rather just make the movie for 50 grand, get a friend to do it, and just say fuck you, like, let's just do it ourselves. And so I believe that that's going to be how we eventually are able to make a living. Is I'm always thinking about the next movie that we can make that costs less than 20 grand, that we can make ourselves. Sure. That we can find a way to release ourselves. And if we can make money on techs, a decent amount of money, where we can take at least 6 months off, then in those 6 months, instead of me, you know, working 40 hours a week, I'm only working on getting the next one going. And then by the time that one's out there, then you've got money coming in from the last two and then three. And you just have to find a way to get yourself that one good chunk of time where all you're doing is focusing on making movies. And then you can snowball it.
And that's it. Tex, we shot Tex Montana how many months ago? 15 months ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
It wasn't touched.
We didn't have time. We had to go. We didn't have time to finish the movie that was already in the can because we were working.
I came home and I edited the two teasers that are online.
Yeah.
And that movie was not touched again for 13 months. And we only went back to it like 2 or 3 months ago.
And to just go to work every single day, and I work at a restaurant, sling hamburgers and pour beers, and know that you have a movie that you could potentially make, you know, 100 grand on, potentially sitting on a hard drive, just not, you can't even take the time to cut it.
We couldn't get in the same room to edit. That was the thing. So, we didn't have the. It was either it wasn't just the money for the flight to get in the same room because we live in two separate states, but it's also the time off work. It's like you take that time off work. It's like, you know, we're living week to week, you know?
Yeah.
That's it.
Sure.
This is miserably sad, guys.
No, this is, I mean, this, I think this is important.
Oh, I agree. You know, like, it's totally important.
This was the point of us ever starting a podcast. My co-host and I, Cameron, we're both filmmakers. We want to talk to people, you know, who we admire and, you know, who are, you know, potential contemporaries. And it's, you know, it's people who are around our own age and stuff. And it's just like, this is really important. So, I mean, I really appreciate you guys sitting down. Probably edit all that shit out.
No, you leave that in there. That was heartfelt and true. Don't you cut that out.
But, so, I mean, Tex Montana, so you do this comedy? I mean, when you got, you know, you said 2 or 3 months ago, did you send it out to people, you know, like your...
Christian finished this movie Wednesday. And drove it from Orlando for our world premiere yesterday.
I burned the Blu-ray. I was rendering it all night. I burned the Blu-ray and I sat down. I had to watch it all the way through, which is like, after I've been working on the movie for like a month solid, I'm just like, I don't want to fucking watch this thing again. And I'm like, let's just watch it. And I'm like, and I can't even watch it in fast forward because I got to listen for audio glitches and I can't do anything else. I can't pack while I'm watching it because I got to look for visual glitches. And then the second it was over, I was like, great, burned 10 Blu-rays. got all my shit in a suitcase, wow. got in the car, and drove from Florida to Tennessee.
So when you tell me that we're having projection issues yesterday, that means even more now. Like, that's horrifying.
We literally brought. I mean, Chattanooga Film Festival. They have never seen it.
They've never seen the movie.
They loved The Battery, believed in us to the point where they were just like, yeah, whatever you got, we'd love to play it. Wow. And that's amazing. And
we were like, you do know it's
like it's
horror.
it's one dude in the woods. Yeah.
So
we've been commenting, you know, the last 2 days we've been here, just what an incredible festival this is. I mean, we live closer to Nashville and that festival fucking turd. I mean, it's the most pretentious, you know.
Yeah.
And I find this one, and it's just all genre cinema and just things that, you know, people can really sink their teeth into.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and as a filmmaker, I mean, they do a really good job of trying to just kill us with alcohol. I mean, they do a really good job.
Yeah. No, I mean, for a fest in its second year, it's like, you know, the amount of people and filmmakers and actors that are coming through here that are getting to talk and meet. I mean, the fact that I just did an acting class with Pat Healy, Pat Healy's like calling me, and I'm like, I got Pat Healy's number now. I just worked with Pat Healy. These are the things that are so important about a film festival. It's not just the fact that maybe the people in Chattanooga are going to get exposed to films that they may never have been able to see before, which is amazing of its own. But it also cultivates relationships among filmmakers and creatives that, you know, you might not have otherwise, that might lead to something else down the road, some collaboration, which is just, that's why I try to go to as many as I can.
This one's especially social, though, right?
I mean, it's very social, especially in their second year. I mean, their lineup is fantastic, and you know,
we're sitting in the lobby yesterday, and the bus pulls up, and here comes Pat Healy and Jason Isner and Elijah Wood, and all these people getting off this bus. I'm like, that's the coolest fucking bus I've ever seen.
I know, we were supposed to be on that bus.
Right? Yeah,
but he had to pick up his girlfriend from the airport.
Right.
God.
we would have been on that bus, but that's how it is. It's like, hey, you guys want to go get free pizza with Elijah Wood and Pat Healy, and I'm like, I'm allowed to eat pizza with you?
Well, guys, I think that's a good place to stop. Thank you so much for your time today. This has been an absolute delight. Thank you so much.
It was wonderful. Thank you for having us.
So for a bigger show, this has been Mike D. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will catch you next week. Goodbye.
We're gonna need a big show. We're